In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, the esoteric techniques the Virgin Mary may have used to conceive Jesus.
What seems to be happening is that the women who are engaged in divine conception are communicating with what the Native Americans, for example, call the star nations or the star beings. These are interdimensional intelligences that we tend to associate with different star groups, like the Pleiades.
Check out the huge selection of Strange Planet merchandise in my online shop. Go to strangeplanet.ca and click on Shop in the menu, or find the link in the episode notes for this podcast. At my Strange Planet shop, you'll find unique men's, women's, unisex t-shirts and athletic shirts, leggings, tote bags, mugs, neck gaiters, and stickers and more. All emblazoned with amazing artwork designed exclusively for my Strange Planet shop by artist illustrator Rick Forgas. If you're a fan of Strange Planet, why not show it off? Go to strangeplanet.ca and click on shop, or go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the link. It's a strange planet. Dress for it.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Friday. Delving into one of the Virgin Mary's forgotten Gospels, the Infancy Gospel of James, Marguerite Mary Reglioso reveals a truth that's been suppressed for nearly two millennia, that Mother Mary was not a passive bystander to her own pregnancy, but an advanced member of a sacred order of women trained in divine conception. Marguerite is considered the foremost authority on the history of virgin birth and has taught graduate and undergraduate courses in both the United States and the United Kingdom. She's the founding director of Seven Sisters Mystery School and the author of The Cult of Divine Birth in Ancient Greece and Virgin Mother Goddesses of Antiquity, and her latest, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Marguerite, welcome. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Richard. Nice to be here.
I'd like to start off by asking you about the infancy gospel of James. What do we know about it? Where did it come from?
Well, it is one of the apocryphal gospels, meaning something that the Roman Catholic Church rejected as legitimate, but it has been hanging around and banging around in ancient libraries, medieval libraries, and so forth. It probably goes back, it could go back to as early as the first century of the Common Era after Jesus. So, it has been known about. The Eastern Orthodox tradition has known about it and has even included it in some of its liturgies. But here in the Western Christian tradition, it's just considered an interesting story. Nevertheless, it is the basis of the feast days devoted to Mother Mary, about her presentation to the temple and her birth and those sorts of things that you do not find in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
So what else does it tell us outside of the Gospels about Mary that we wouldn't know?
It basically tells us everything about Mary. It tells us how she was divinely conceived by her mother, Anne, how she was raised by her mother as an infant and a toddler, as a sacred priestess in training in her mother's womb, how Mary was trained in the Hebrew temple up until the age of either 12, 13, 14, or 15, when she was at that point let out of the temple because she was starting to menstruate. She was paired together with Joseph, and then it tells us exactly how she conceived Jesus.
So what you're saying so far is pretty much in line with Christian religion. So when does it deviate? Where is the departure point here?
Well, how it deviates is, first of all, we never hear of Anne, her mother, at all in traditional, in the Bible, in the New Testament. So right there, it's telling us that Mary was conceived in a special way by her mother. We never hear that in traditional Christianity. We really never hear any of these details that I've elaborated to you. And we never hear that, for example, Elizabeth was Mary's aunt, not her
cousin.
Not her cousin.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, it provides all the details that you don't hear in the New Testament. All you hear in the New Testament is that she was a passive vehicle to this pregnancy. Nobody knows how it happened. And all of a sudden, Jesus was born, and she makes an appearance, maybe at the wedding of Cana, where she asks Jesus to turn the water into wine. But we don't really hear very much about her at all.
And so Elizabeth was the mother of John the Baptist.
That's right.
Was John the Baptist also then conceived as a in miraculous conception, as a virgin birth?
Yes, and that we do hear in the New Testament. But what this infancy gospel of James tells us is that actually Elizabeth was part of the same group ritual that Mary was involved in with the other virgins of the temple to conceive divine children. And the two of them were the successful procreators in this ritual. It is metaphorically described to us in this gospel as the fact that they were weaving a temple veil. But because of my background and my research into divine birth in ancient Greece and the entire Mediterranean world, I was able to decipher that and decode that and understand that this was no mere weaving program that these eight women were involved in. They were involved in a divine conception ritual. And yes, Elizabeth conceived John the Baptist and Mary conceived Jesus.
My understanding is that Elizabeth conceived John. It was somewhat miraculous because of her advanced age, and I believe she was told that she was barren. Also, of course, Sarah, the wife of the patriarch Abraham, also was a very advanced age. And so that these were miraculous births because of their advanced age. But you're saying the research points one step further, that in fact these were miraculous conceptions. They were virgin births.
That's right. Deliberately cultivated by these women who had been trained and practiced in these arts their whole life. And I would add to that, Anne, Mary's mother, was considered of advanced age, and by, you know, contemporary standards would be postmenopausal or what have you. But this is an entire, what I call, lineage of divine birth. Women who understood these practices passed them down to the next women in line, and this was all part of something that they knew and willed. And the purpose was to bring in special high holy beings to the planet to assist humanity.
All right. So when we're talking about a miraculous conception or parthenogenesis, you make a distinction between what we understand in the Christian and Christian faith as a miraculous conception, parthenogenesis, and a biological parthenogenesis. So explain the difference.
Biological parthenogenesis is something that can happen in certain animals, either naturally or particularly under captivity, or through experimentation with chemicals or electrical shock. Spiritual parthenogenesis is something that is a high-level advanced shamanic technology that very high holy women are capable of understanding and accomplishing within their own bodies using the light, matter, and biological interface in a much different way than would happen through ordinary conception.
All right. So what does this say about Jesus? Does that take the divinity away from Jesus? Does that mean that he is not who he said he was, the Son of God?
No, not at all. In fact, it validates exactly what Christianity has been telling us, but it gives us a rationale and an understanding that thinking people can at last grasp, that, oh, this was a shamanic technology. Oh, but the purpose of it was specifically to bring in what we're calling an avatar. In other words, a representation of the divinity on earth. So it verifies Jesus's divinity. It just shows us the method by which this is possible, and the fact that these women are the actors and, in fact, the orchestrators of the entire advent of beings such as Jesus to the planet, something that gets very much overlooked in the New Testament and traditional Christianity.
So this is for materialists, obviously, who have a great deal of difficulty with the idea of a miraculous conception, and even many devout who struggle with the idea, oh, come on, you know, a virgin birth. This will give them, I guess, some scientific basis that this is possible.
Yes, and if not scientific, it certainly gives them an alternative spiritual, biological perspective on how this could have been happening.
So this school, this shamanic school of womb mysteries, does it have a name? Do we know where it was located? And any more about the practitioners, the teachers?
I wouldn't say that it has a name. It was widespread throughout the entire world. You can find these stories on every continent. So we know that women have been practicing this from time immemorial, and you see evidences of it going on into historical times, where Plato's mother, Perictione is said to have given birth to him in this way. Pythagoras's mother, the same thing. Alexander the Great's mother, Olympias, the same thing. So it's not one big unified cult. It's pockets of practices all around the world where women understood these processes, perhaps because they were accessing the same knowledge streams of how to do it. And they were, as I said, in lineages, mother-daughter, or it would be passed on from grandmother to granddaughter, or across, you know, to aunts. Families were practicing this. And then they were training women in temples. I would say that there is a very much evidence that, for example, the Delphic Oracle, the temple at Delphi, included women who were practicing parthenogenesis. Why do I say this? Because all of the place names of the towns and the streams and the rivers were all given to women who gave birth divinely or their children, if you go back into the mythology. So this is really widespread, and even into Native American times. For example, the peacemaker who was born in the Haudenosaunee or Iroquois Confederacy. He was the miraculous being who, because he was born in virgin fashion by his mother, had special powers. That's the point of these conceptions, to bring in a child, an avatar, who has special powers to help humanity. Because he had miracle abilities, he was able to convince those five warring nations to come to peace, and eventually the sixth nation joined in that confederacy.
You say to understand how divine birth works, you have to understand a Sanskrit word called siddhi, or a concept known as siddhi. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. What is siddhi?
Yes. A siddhi, S-I-D-D-H-I, is a miraculous ability, or an ability that seems miraculous. It is something that a very high-level spiritual adept can cultivate, an ability that seems counter-biological. And there are various stories of saints being able to cut off their hands and reattach them, pull out their entrails and put them back in, get to death states and come back to life, walk through walls, not cast shadows, walk on water, etc. These are cataloged, and there are even stories of these things happening in recent centuries, if not recent decades. Swami Sri Kaleshwar in India was able to have students reattach heads of birds and things like that. So what I posit is that the ability to conceive it, what we are calling, in a method that we are calling miraculous, really was the ultimate siddhi that anyone could accomplish, and it happened to fall to women because they are the ones who have the wombs by which this could be accomplished.
So in this case, we are not talking about commingling with some non-human entity or sex with spirits, as you point out in the book. We are talking about ingestion of certain plants and herbs, meditative practices, and the like.
Right. So what I discern in my research is that there are phases and stages of this practice, and the original would have been what we're calling parthenogenesis, where the woman is at such a high level of engagement with her body and the light matter interface that she is able to become one essentially with the divine force itself, become androgynous and conceive. Okay, we have these stories. It may be that some of these women, as part of their training, were using sacred medicines to open up their consciousness, or it may be that they were so advanced that they didn't need the medicines. But at later phases, you have women practicing what we will call sexual encounters with disembodied spirits. This is a later development, and so it necessitates the understanding that a human physical being can, in fact, cavort with a non-physical energy or entity and become pregnant from it. Then we have a later phase where the practice has degenerated so much, the women have lost a lot of the knowledge. This is as patriarchy is advancing, that they then must use a human male surrogate in these rituals who is thought to make room for the god within his body, and then, though, physically have an intercourse with the woman and impregnate her. This is how it is said that the pharaohs were conceived in ancient Egypt.
More of my conversation with Marguerite Mary Reglioso when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Lincoln County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again, and Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. And we give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
C60 Evo delivers the miracle molecule, ESS60. It's pure carbon 60. Why not love your body and share C60 Evo with those you love? ESS 60 from C60 Evo is a mega antioxidant for increased strength, endurance, flexibility, and a deeper sleep. It's great for pets too. I take a tablespoon every day, and so does the mighty Aphrodite. We're both sleeping better than we have in years. And during the day, we have such tremendous energy and vitality. We're both pain-free. In a landmark peer-reviewed animal study in Paris, France, rats fed ESS 60 lived twice their normal lifespan. Go to c60evo.com/richard-serrett or click on the C60 Evo link in the episode notes. Use the code EVRS at checkout and save 10%. ESS 60 from C60 Evo. Order your miracle in a bottle today.
As you're staring up at the night sky, ever wonder who's staring back? No, me either. But I guess you better say it because of Richard, you know, he's all wrapped up in this stuff. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Why does the priestess have to be virgin?
Because she needs to not have any other energy or physicality enter into her body. She needs to remain energetically of a particular vibration, and when a male energy comes into her body, it shifts that off, and she is therefore not able to align with the divine forces of the universe in the way she needs to bring a high holy being into the planet. It's just a kind of hygiene that needs to happen in order for this conception to be made possible. And then also, it eliminates any kind of interactivity with a man coming in and bringing in his bloodline, his karma, his ego or problems, anything of that nature. It allows the woman just to be, just stick straight and be able to accomplish this in a pure way.
And do we know anything more about the plant medicines that were used?
Well, not necessarily, but what we can do is cross-reference with information about plant medicine in the ancient world. And when we start doing this, and I've written about this in my first book, The Cult of Divine Birth in Ancient Greece, we start seeing things like cannabis and mushrooms and hellebore and henbane and wines that were made through multiple substances being woven together and stirred together, that sort of thing. So we can surmise that it could have been one of many of these types of things. And at Delphi, the waters themselves from the Kasotis spring were said to have hallucinogenic properties. So there were chemicals in there as well. So you find it in many different places, plant and nature-based.
You say there's also a connection with these priestesses, with the stars.
Yes. Oftentimes, what seems to be happening is that the women who are engaged in divine conception are communicating with what the Native Americans, for example, call the star nations or the star beings. These are interdimensional intelligences that we tend to associate with different star groups, like the Pleiades, like Andromeda, like the Orion constellation, you know, these sorts of places. Where we see really strong connection with the stars and virgin birth priestesses is in, for example, the ancient site, the oracle place of Dodona in ancient Greece, one of the earliest oracles where the women gave prophecy. They were the site, one of the psychic places of the ancient world. Those women were called Peleades, which means doves, and it also means Pleiades. So it was a direct reference to the Pleiades stars, indicating that they were in some kind of communication, not only for the oracle information they were giving through, but for the children that they were conceiving.
Fascinating, fascinating. So the dove, you mentioned, is connected with Pleiades.
Yes.
And do we see Do we see this dove, an inscription or some sort of, I don't know, an artifact representing a dove? As examples, you know, connected to the likes of Sarah and Anne and Elizabeth and Mary.
Where we see it connected to Mary is, for example, in this infancy gospel of James, where it says that she eats like a dove in the temple. And that is a clear reference connecting her with these oracular women and these divine birth women throughout the ancient Mediterranean world. Okay. And also we see the symbol of the dove in an episode where they are trying to figure out how to pair Mary up with the man who will be her guardian. And so they go through this elaborate ritual where the men, the widows of the town, the widowers of the town have to come and they hold their staffs. And Joseph's staff has emerged from it a dove. And that is the sign that he is the one to take Mary. So you see these dove images appear all over the place. And they hark back to these other oracular priestesses and situations. And so these are parts of the codes that I decipher in this book, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception, to show people around and indicate to people what is actually going on.
How important is lineage in determining this ability? So Anne, Mary's mother, had this ability. Did she pass it on somehow through her DNA to Mary, or was it just because she was her daughter, she shared her knowledge?
Well, she passed it on first in the fact that Mary herself was divinely born, which means she was already an avatar, okay? So she was a high-level being. Secondly, Anne had her trained in her sanctuary, her bedroom sanctuary. From the time Mary was born until she was 3 years old, Anne would regularly have the virgins from the temple come in and do specific things with her. I discern that what they're doing is they're teaching her the ways. They're teaching her at the level that she can handle the beginnings of the understandings of this divine birth practice. Perhaps they're doing prayers and mantras with her. Perhaps they are purifying her energetically through some kind of hands-on means or things like that. And then the other way that Anne passes this ability on to Mary is by giving Mary over to the temple to then be raised further by these virgins. They are going to complete this training for her. So there are many points along the way and methods by which Anne is imparting this ability and these teachings to Mary.
I certainly believe a woman's reproductive power is, you know, divine and sacred. But beyond what you've just said about Mary and others, was there anything else special about her that, so for example, other women also could not, or could they harness this divine birth power?
Well, what we are coming to, Richard, in this day and age is the fact that, yes, women can harness this power. And what this is going to take is a lot of unveiling of the disinformation, the misinformation, the hiding of this information, and also the resurrection of the teachings. So, for example, one body of teachings that has come back to us in recent decades is the entire Holy Womb Chakra system that was written down on ancient manuscripts of India and then saved for thousands of years. And then this saint, Sri Kaleshwar, located the relevant texts, put them all together in a series of teachings, which he then taught to others and which I have been taught. And these are a series of mantra practices with philosophical understandings, other types of meditative practices, and the use of sacred symbols in order to purify the womb and get its powers back online, so to speak, so that we can begin the divine conception processes. By the way, not just through Mary's means, but also when a man and a woman come together to be able to have a more conscious conception, bringing forth what Kaleshwar called divine children. So this information that I'm uncovering and describing is not Mary's alone, and it's not just historical. It's pointing toward our future.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that that this method can also be used when a man and a woman participate in the conception, because I was worried there for a moment you were suggesting that this knowledge would lead women to conclude that they no longer need men.
No, and that's a big part of my message, that is absolutely not the case. First of all, parthenogenesis, or divine birth, or divine congress with a spirit, is a high holy practice that really only a few women are only ever going to get to, all right? They have to be ordained to do it. They have to be karmically in alignment to do it. But there are other methods by which a man and a woman coming together in a normal kind of union can use these various other types of practices to bring in a higher level being onto the planet.
So getting back to the infancy gospel of James, how are we able to, verify that it is, in fact, credible?
I think that a lot of the description that I am giving to it, the analysis that I am giving to it in this book, will help along those lines. And it's very interesting because there's another scholar named Ali Katouz who has similarly looked at this gospel. And although she by no means has come to the conclusions that I have, she and other scholars have discerned that this is a very important, probably original and legitimate gospel that formed the basis of early liturgies and early artwork before it was suppressed by the Council of Nicaea. So, there are other scholars here and there who are saying this is a legitimate, important document, and what I'm doing gives another level of appreciation for it by showing how the writer was definitely tapped into what was going on in the ancient world, especially as regards women's mysteries, that, again, give it another level of credence.
So why was it suppressed, do you suppose?
I believe the church itself said that it was full of absurdities, but I believe that, like with most things related to women and women's powers, it was too threatening. And therefore, things like that get hidden, squirreled away, put underneath the sands of time in Egypt, dismissed, denigrated, and what have you. It's just too threatening to the patriarchal authorities.
Hmm. And yet, I mean, they leave one of the most important elements in the gospel story, the resurrection, to the testimony of women, which is interesting.
That's right, because here's the thing, Richard, they can never quite get away from the fact that women are intricately woven into this story. So what they do is they give it just enough credence and information, but not too much, and they do all they can to turn people's gaze the other way about women's powers.
So what does this book mean for the future of Christianity and even Judaism?
Well, very interestingly, it could bring a revival to both of these religions, depending on how people want to embrace it and look at it. Because a scholarly work that is saying virgin birth is real and this is how it was done can really bolster and support what the church has been saying all along. So ditto in Judaism, this story about Sarah being barren and just praying hard enough to have a child in her elder years, if we flip that around and say this was a high holy woman who was practicing divine birth her whole life unsuccessfully until finally she did hit the nail on the head, that can also revivify interest in Judaism, especially for women, because they can look at the deeper levels and layers and mystical aspects of this religion. So it can either revive or it can ruffle a few feathers, let's say.
The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Marguerite, how do we get a copy?
You can buy it wherever books are sold, either online, on the Inner Traditions website, the publisher, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Indie.org, or you can ask your local bookstore to order it, and you can pick it up. It's also available in Audible, audio version, or ebook, as well as print.
Fantastic discussion. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate being here.
Marguerite Mary Rigoglioso, The Mystery Tradition of Miraculous Conception. Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a flash with a few words about an upcoming episode. You can become an official Patreon supporter of my work here at Strange Planet Productions by donating a monthly amount through patreon.com/strangeplanet. patreon.com/strangeplanet. There are several tiers to choose from. Pick which one is right for you, but any monthly amount is greatly appreciated. As a sign of my appreciation, you can have your name mentioned on air during my weekly radio show, or you could have your name included in a crawl on my YouTube channel live stream. You could also receive episodes of my old podcast, The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone. This critically acclaimed podcast, produced in partnership with Chris Jericho, is not currently available anywhere else. If you enjoy this podcast or my weekly radio program, The Conspiracy Show, you can really get behind me and my work by donating once a month at patreon.com/strangeplanet. patreon.com/strangeplanet. Coming up next time, part one of a special two-part series on targeted individuals with Dr. John Hall, John Rappaport, and Michael Fitzhugh Bell. Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.